Welcome to this podcast by The Rocks Church. We hope you find it challenging and inspiring. For more information, visit therocks.church.
We started this series 3 weeks ago by saying that when Jesus came on earth, he came to reveal to us a different kind of God. He came to reveal to us a God that is so radically different than the one portrayed by religion. The God that Jesus proclaimed is the God who is love, the God who is kind, the God who is gracious, the God who is merciful, the God who is for us and not against us. In fact, Jesus basically said through his teaching and through his, example that God is love. That's who God is. That God is first and foremost love before anything else. Yes, he is holy, he is just and all that, but God is essentially love in his very core being. That's why we believe that God cannot stop loving you. We believe there's no off switch to God's love. So whatever your picture of God is that doesn't look as beautiful, as loving, as merciful, as kind, as patient as Jesus, that is not the true and complete picture of God, because Jesus said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And the best proof of that love that God has for us is when he sent his one and only Son, Jesus Christ, so that Jesus said, whoever believes in him shall not die, but have everlasting life. So if that's you, maybe you don't know this God, I want to invite you to put your faith and your trust in this God who is for you and not against you. All right. Now, as we conclude this series, I want to tackle one huge, huge issue in Western Christianity, because a lot of Christians actually believe this, that God wants you to be happy. God wants you to be happy. Now, I wish I could stand here and tell you that's what Jesus said, that God, above all else, wants you to be happy, that God wants you to enjoy life, that God will never want anything bad to happen to you and all that. I wish I could stand here and tell you that. But let me tell you, friends, Jesus never said that. Jesus never said that. In fact, if you hold on to this theology, if you hold on to this belief, you are in a very slippery slope into other wrong doctrines or wrong ideas about God. That's why this is very, very important. I want you to pay attention. If you believe that God, first and foremost, wants you to be happy above everything else, it is a very dangerous belief to have. It's a very dangerous place to be, to have this thinking. I call this theology the theology of happiness. What is the theology of happiness? You would believe this, that whatever makes me happy must be right, and whatever makes me unhappy must be wrong. Because if God exists, first and foremost, to make me happy, that means I have to be happy all the time. And whatever makes me happy must not be from God, must not be right. And whatever doesn't make me happy must be wrong. You see? So this is a wrong thinking. In fact, a lot of people, Christians and non-Christians, believe this. And that's why a lot of people don't want to become a Christian, right? Because they believe that God is a cosmic killjoy. So that's why Sheryl Crow, for example, said this. If it makes you happy, it can't be that bad. It can't be that bad. If it makes you happy, then why the hell are you so sad? And some of you are not happy right now because I just said hell in church. And I'm telling you, this is what a lot of people believe. And unfortunately for me, I've been a pastor a long time. Many, many Christians even hold on to this belief. Maybe you don't formulate it in your brain, in your mind, that you have this understanding of theology. But when it happens to you, all right, suddenly, the faithful old you, when it happens to you, suddenly what you always believe about God, suddenly all of them go out the window, right? We believe this: discomfort, delay, suffering, inconveniences, and obstacles can't be God's will, right? If you start your theology with the assumption, with the presupposition that God exists to make you happy, then I don't like discomfort. Discomfort doesn't make me happy. That means it must not be God's will. I don't like delay. I hate delay. I hate to wait. If I want something from God, I want it now. So if I don't have it, that means I'm not happy. That means it can't be God's will. See, inconveniences, obstacles, it can't be God's will in my life. And when you hold on to this belief, guess what? This is what you will do. That's why I said this is a slippery, slippery slope. Without knowing it, what I really, truly worship is the false gods of comfort, of money, of pleasure, and of things. That's exactly what we worship when you hold on to this belief that God exists to make you happy. Now, with that awesome introduction that makes everyone depressed, let me tell you the good news, all right? The good news is this. God is not a cosmic killjoy. If you have a thought or a belief that God is like an angry judge out there, out to destroy everyone's happiness, well, you're wrong. Just look at Jesus. Jesus, I don't know if you noticed, but Jesus has always gone to every party that he was invited to. He loved parties, Jesus. Don't tell me God is a cosmic killjoy. So God, let me tell you this. God delights in your happiness. God delights in your happiness. But here's the truth. But your happiness is not the highest priority to God. Right? God delights in your happiness just like any parent here. You would delight in your child's happiness, wouldn't you? I would, you would. I mean, Jaden loves to play soccer. And, you know, imagine with me, Jaden kicks the winning goal. So he's joyful, he's very happy. Guess what? As his parent, I'm happy for him. You see, that's what God is like. See, if Jaden kicks the winning goal, I'm so very happy for him. If he's happy, I'm happy. You see, but if Jaden then turns around and flips off the opposing team, then suddenly his happiness is no longer my priority. If he showboats, you know, his skill to people and then, you know, just makes the opposing team angry, then suddenly his happiness is no longer my priority. Suddenly, his character becomes my priority. Suddenly, I want to discipline him. Suddenly, I want to tell him, Jaden, that's not what you do, even though you kick the winning goal. You see, God delights, let me tell you, God delights in your happiness. But, understand this, your happiness is not the highest priority to God. So this morning, my purpose here is very simple. I want to dispel all the myths about how God wants you to be happy. In fact, I will tell you two specific ways how God doesn't want you to be happy. All right? Two specific ways how God doesn't want you to be happy. Number one is this. God doesn't want you happy if it means you doing something wrong or unwise. All right? God doesn't want you happy if it means you doing something that is wrong or something that is unwise. Recently, I ran into an old friend of mine who's a Christian, and I haven't seen him in a while. So I met him, and I asked him, hey, how are you doing, man, and all that. And I asked him, how's his wife and all that? And he said, no, I'm no longer married. We just got a divorce. And I said, oh, man, sorry to hear that. Can you tell me what happened? Like, what happened? And this is what he said, and I'm sure you heard this 1,000 times. If I have $1 million for every time I heard this, I'll be very, very wealthy right now. He said, she wasn't happy, I wasn't happy, so we decided to get a divorce. How many times have you heard that? Yeah? She's not happy, I'm not happy, so we divorce. Now, this is a Christian couple, all right? They vowed before God, right? This is not a contract. They vowed before God for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness or in health, for as long as we both shall live, right? So where in that covenant vow, where was happiness mentioned? Nowhere, you see? Now, I'm not telling this to put a guilt trip on those who just experienced the pain of divorce. That's not my purpose. I know it was painful for you. It was devastating to you. So my purpose is not to put you on a guilt trip. I believe if you've been divorced, God's grace is enough for you. I believe there are better days ahead, even though it's very painful for you right now. I really believe that. So I'm not here to put a guilt trip on you. But I'm talking right now to those Christian marriages, all right? If you're contemplating divorce, not because of infidelity, not because of abuse and all that, but because simply you're not happy, all right? My encouragement to you, my prayer for you, what I'm asking you to do, what God wants you to do, is to get a good and wise counsel, because God doesn't want you happy if it means doing something wrong or something that is unwise. See, God doesn't want you to do that, right? And it works in every part of our life. So you have to understand this. You have a job, a good paying job, but you hate it. You don't like it. You're not happy at your job. You have 4 little kids at home under the age of 10. You have a mortgage to pay. You have a student loan to pay. Now, just because you're not happy doesn't mean you can just quit your job and just whatever happens, happens, man. I'm not happy at my job anymore. I don't care. And then you'll be out of job for the next 6 months, not able to pay the mortgage, not able to provide for your children, just because you're not happy at work. So if it means you doing something wrong and unwise, man, you know, God doesn't want you happy. I'm not saying that you have to be stuck in a job that you don't like. I'm not saying that. But be wise about it. That's what I'm saying. Be wise about it. Ask God to give you another job, all right? And in the first place, you have to ask, like, why am I not happy in this job? What is my expectation of this job? You expect everything to go smoothly all the time? You expect no conflict in your job ever? Is that what you expect? Maybe if that's your expectation, you won't be happy in any job. You see, so you have to ask yourself a question. What is the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing? Is it only because I believe God wants me to be happy? If you're a Christian couple, you're not yet married, you're about to be married, you know that God created sex so beautifully to be consumed under the confine of marriage. So you don't go around just because, oh, it feels right. You know, it makes us happy. So I'm sure this is God's will for us. After all, we're going to be married someday. We're going to be married soon. So just because it makes you happy, all right? If it's wrong or unwise, you know God doesn't want you to be happy. For those of you who are married, maybe you don't have a good relationship with your wife. Maybe you don't have a good relationship with your husband. It doesn't make it right for you to go through these, you know, websites and all that just because you believe that God wants you to be happy. So you have to be careful. God doesn't want you happy if it means doing something wrong or something that is unwise. That is not the reason why God exists. Peter says this, "But just as he who called you is happy, so be happy in all you do." That what it said? No, that's not what it said. "Just as God who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do." God delights in your happiness, but God's priority for you, first and foremost, is not your happiness. So that's the first thing, all right? Number two. This is another way God doesn't want you to be happy. God doesn't want you happy when it's only based on the things of this world. See, we are supposed to have a longer, a much bigger vision than that. This world that we live in is only temporary. God doesn't want your life to revolve around things that are only of this world. But we are bombarded every single day to think about our life in this world, right? Every single day. In the past, we are bombarded by advertisements, shop fronts and all that. But nowadays, by social media, you know, by everything, we are told that unless you have this, you won't be happy. You know, I was perfectly happy with my iPhone until iPhone X or iPhone 10 came out. Suddenly, man, my phone sucks, man. You know, that border on my iPhone is so big. I want edgeless. I want, you know, right? I want that George Foreman grill. That will make me happy as I grill my meat on George Foreman grill that I see late at night when I can't sleep, right? I want that blanket with holes in them, you know, makes me happy, right? Because what? You deserve it. You work hard for it. You deserve the very best, right? Because you're worth it. That's it. You, my friends, with all the hard work that you put in, you deserve to be happy. You're worth it, right? What's the point of having a lot of money in your bank account if you're not happy with your marriage? That must not be God's will for your life. Leave your wife. Look for a better, younger model. That will make you happy. See? Because you deserve it. You know, we believe better possessions, peaceful circumstances, thrilling experiences, perfect relationships, perfect appearance equals happiness. When you don't have any of this, when you don't have one of this, suddenly you can't be happy. I need that bigger TV in my life. I need that bigger house. I need that new car. And I need me not to have any conflict in the office. I can't afford, I don't like it that sometimes I argue with my wife. I don't like the fact that I'm stuck here in Perth. I want to go on these wonderful holidays to Hawaii, to America, to New Zealand, whatever. I want these thrilling experiences. Otherwise, my life is boring. I'm not happy. It's boring. I want that perfect relationships. I want that perfect appearance. I want that cream that can make me look 22 again. I need that. I need that hair growth, whatever formula. That will make me happy, right? You know, when I first came to Australia, I was introduced to this most amazing food in the whole wide world. I never had it before. I didn't know it existed. But when I was 17 years old, I moved to Perth, and I came across this wonderful food that I love so much. I could literally have like a lot of them, like 12 of them. At one time, at once, I could. And the food I'm talking about, you will know this food. Like, I didn't know it existed. It's just, this is like God's one most wonderful creation. Crab sticks. I love it. Oh, man, I'm telling you, until today, I still loved it. In fact, I love it so much, I love it better than the original crabs, than real crabs, because real crabs is so messy, you have to like, this is wonderful. But do you know what is the ingredient inside crab sticks? Mostly starch, all right? You know how much crab they put in crab sticks? Zero crab. Man, I'm telling you, I've been duped, but it's too late. I already loved it. My goodness. You know, all the things in this world that you think make you happy, they're counterfeit. They're not the real deal, all right? Maybe for a time being, they can make you happy. I'm not saying that they can't make you happy. I mean, give me iPhone X, try me. See if I'm going to be happy for a few days or not, right? I dare you. For a time being, yeah, I get it. But let me tell you, they are counterfeit. In the long run, they're not going to make you happy. This is what John said. Do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in them. For everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life comes not from the Father, but from the world. The world and its desires pass away. Eventually, they're going to be gone. Jaden just started liking cars, showing me all these most expensive cars in the world. And I told him, Jaden, even the most expensive cars in the world, one day they're going to be destroyed. They're going to be no more. The biggest, best house you can imagine, one day they're going to be gone, right? The most wonderful watch you can have, one day they're going to be destroyed. Let me tell you, they're all going to pass away. That's why John said, do not love the world or anything that is in the world. And if you do, the love of the Father is not in them. And a lot of people read this and they think, wow, if we love the world, God doesn't love us anymore. The Father will not love us anymore. That's not what it said. See, the love of the Father can mean two things. Either it means God's love for you, or it could mean your love for God, right? That's what the love of the Father means. So the meaning of off can be both ways. So now I believe this means that it shows that you don't love God. You think you love God, but if you love this world or the things of this world, it shows that you don't love God as much as you think you love God. That's why Jesus said you cannot serve two masters. You have to choose either one or the other, you see. But this is very dangerous. The lust of the flesh, right? Our sinful desires, the lust of the eyes, our greed for more and more stuff. Let me tell you, it's like an appetite. It will never be fully and finally satisfied. You think, you know, after eating a huge meal, you think, that's it. I'm not going to eat ever again in my life. And then 11 o'clock at night, you open the fridge and you said, honey, there's nothing in the fridge. Right? That's what appetite is. Appetite, by nature, cannot be fully and finally satisfied. You will always want more. You will always want more. That's why be careful. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. These three are killers in your life. They seek to destroy your soul. All right? So, maybe you're asking, so if God doesn't want me to be happy, right? It's not necessarily at least God's priority for me to be happy. Then what does God want out of me? Because He's a good Father. You said so yourself. So what does God want for us? Let me tell you, something that is much, much better than just your happiness. God doesn't want you happy as much as God wants you blessed. God doesn't want you happy as much as He wants you blessed. And you think, what is the difference? I thought a blessed life means I have what I want. I thought a blessed life means I live a healthy life. I thought a blessed life means like my relationship is perfect. I thought a blessed life is this and this. And let me tell you, Jesus, at one time in His ministry, He preached on this very subject of what it means to be blessed. All right? In fact, this sermon is so famous. This is the most well-known sermon of Jesus compared to any other sermons that He's ever preached for the 3.5 years that He was doing His ministry. In fact, this preaching from Jesus, this sermon from Jesus, is so famous that the Indian leader Gandhi loved it so much, and he actually, you know, lived his life on the basis of this sermon that Jesus preached. It's called the Sermon on the Mount. It was told that Gandhi had 2 hours of daily meditation every day. 2 hours. 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the evening. And one of the sermons, one of the texts that he used to meditate every day is this passage that we are about to read. That's how powerful this passage is. This is what it means to have a blessed life. All right? If you want to know who are the people who are blessed, what are the characteristics of people who are blessed? What does it mean for me to be blessed? Then you would want to read this powerful, powerful sermon from Jesus. In Matthew chapter 5, Jesus said this, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Notice, 8 times Jesus used the word blessed. The Greek word that he used is actually makarios. Makarios means actually exceedingly blessed. It means like more than just happiness. Sometimes it's translated happy because in some context it can be translated happy. But here, look at what Jesus said. Who are the people who are blessed? Who are the people who are blessed? The part in the black font are the people who are blessed. The poor in spirit, those who mourn, those who are meek, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, those who are merciful, those who are pure in heart, the peacemakers, those who are persecuted because of righteousness. These are the people who are blessed. Now, 8 times Jesus said this. Not once did Jesus say, "Blessed are the wealthy, blessed are the healthy, Blessed are those who never have a bad day. Blessed are those whose kids get along with each other. Blessed are those who have a wonderful house. Jesus never said that, not even once. Look at the correct characteristics of people who are blessed. The poor in spirit, the mourn, the meek. By the way, the blessing, let me tell you, a lot of people read this so wrongly, it's not even funny, right? The word for is there for a reason. Four, eight times, right? The blessing doesn't come on the first half of the statement. The blessing comes on the second half of the statement. So you're not blessed because you are poor in spirit. Being poor is not good, whether it's in spirit or in body, in whatever, being poor is bad, right? But when you are poor in spirit, you are blessed. You know why? Because yours is the kingdom of heaven. When you mourn, you're not blessed because you mourn. So Christians, please, do me a favor. Stop going around telling people who are mourning and telling them that they're blessed, right? It is terrible to mourn, let me tell you. Don't you ever come to my wife who just lost her dad this year and come and tell her that she is blessed because she mourns. No. But here's the blessing. When you mourn, you are blessed. You know why? Because God will comfort you. That's why you're blessed. It is terrible to mourn, right? It is terrible to be persecuted for righteousness. Let me tell you, it's not fun to be persecuted for righteousness, but when you are persecuted for righteousness, you are blessed. Jesus said, you know why? Because yours is the kingdom of heaven. The blessing comes in the second half of the statement. So in none of this will you ever read that a life of blessing is a life of comfort. A life of blessing is a life of, without trouble. A life that is always characterized by goodness and pleasure in life. At no point did Jesus ever say that. God wants out of you so much more than your happiness. God wants you blessed. If you look at these characteristics, I can summarize it like this. God doesn't want you to pursue happiness. God wants you to pursue Him. God wants you to pursue Him. If your happiness is only happiness because of the things of this world, God said, I have a much, much bigger things in store for you than that. You are not created just to enjoy this small blip that you call life in this world. 70, 80 years, if you're strong, Psalm 90 says, right? But here's what God wants out of you more than anything else. He wants a relationship with you. He wants you to know that a life of blessing doesn't mean a trouble-free life. But a life of blessing means as you go through the pain of life, because this world, don't forget, is not the perfect world that God had intended. This world is a sinful world that we live in. The law of sin and death is at work in our lives, whether you like it or not. God has reversed that process 2,000 years ago through the cross. But the final fulfillment of what God had started on the cross will not be fully realized until Jesus Christ comes back again to restore this whole thing, where God Himself said there will be no more tears. God Himself will wipe the tears away from your eyes. But as long as you live in this world, let me tell you, my friends, if you believe that God exists just to make you happy in this world, you are absolutely on a dangerous, dangerous path, all right? More than anything, God said this, take delight in the Lord and He will give you the desires of your heart, right? As you align your heart to God's heart, suddenly what God wants will be what you want, all right? Jesus said the same thing in a different way in Matthew chapter 6. By the way, Matthew chapter 6 follows after Matthew chapter 5, the Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes that we just read, blessed are, and then Jesus said this, in conclusion, seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. As you align your heart to God's heart, let me tell you, God wants out of you so much more than just a happy life. He wants you to live a blessed life. You know why? Because as you live a blessed life in this world, you can be a blessing to the people around you. As you realize more and more that God is always there every step of the way with you. Some of you right now are experiencing trials. Maybe if you had a choice, you wouldn't want to go through these trials. Maybe you wouldn't want to wish it on anyone. But what did James say? Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, when you are faced with all kinds of trials. Because what? You know what? These trials will produce in you perseverance, and then your faith will be tested, and then you look back, you realize, wow, you know, I wouldn't wish that on anyone, the trials that I went through, but I am who I am today because God allowed me to go through that painful experience in my life. Some of you are pretty weak right now. You can't see even the next day ahead. You are weak spiritually. You're just about to give up on God. You are weak physically. You are weak mentally. You just can't see how you can get through these dark, dark days in your life, these weak moments of your life. But the blessed life means that at the moment of weakness, that's where God's strength will be made perfect. When you are at your weakest, that's when God will manifest His strength in you. His grace will always be enough for you. You may be going through the storm of life right now, and you don't understand how, you know, you can have peace during this storm of life. But let me tell you, Jesus said, you know, the peace that passes understanding, right, will be yours. Will be yours during this terrible, terrible storm in your life. But at the end of the day, I want to leave you with this one verse. This is a very powerful, powerful verse. And I want you to remember it. If you're taking notes, I want you to take note of the reference. I want you to, if you can memorize it even better. This is what we don't realize. Because we only see with our eyes, our physical eyes. We don't see ahead. That's why what Asaph said in Psalm 73 is very important. He looked at the injustice around him. He looked at the rich people who had total disregard for God, and yet their life was successful, prosperous. And as I said, what's going on? Here I am dedicating myself to God every day, and yet I'm sickly, and yet I'm not blessed. And then Asaph said, until I entered the sanctuary of God, I realized I've been like a brute animal. I've been like a brute animal, Asaph said. You know the difference between animal and us? Animals, they don't think long term. They don't plan ahead. See, we human beings, we plan ahead. See, animals, your dogs will never think of starting a bank of bones. Never. At most, if your dog is, you know, industrious, he would dig a hole in your backyard and bury his bone back there. You know, that's as far ahead as they could think. Don't be like a brute animal. Think ahead. This is what Peter said. Dear friends, I warn you, as temporary residents and foreigners, do you know that's who you are? That's who we are if we call ourselves followers of Christ. We are just temporary residents and foreigners in this world. To keep away from the worldly desires that wage war against your very souls, be careful to live properly among your unbelieving neighbors. Then even if they accuse you of doing wrong, they will see your honorable behavior and they will give honor to God when He judges the world. I love the Message version of this, all right? This is what the Message version of the same two verses say. Friends, this world is not your home. So don't make yourselves cozy in it. It's not your home. Don't indulge your ego at the expense of your soul. Live an exemplary life among the natives so that your actions will refute their prejudices. Then they'll be won over to God's side and be there to join in the celebration when He arrives. Notice what Peter said. Live an exemplary life. So the people around you, people who don't know Christ, will want to know Christ because of you. God is far more interested in your character than He is in your happiness. Let me tell you that. He delights in your happiness, but He's more interested in you as a person than in your happiness. You are meant for something so much bigger than just the pleasures of this world. One final story. Imagine taking a fish out of the ocean and put that fish on the beach. All right? I want everyone to play along with me. Okay? Imagine taking a fish out of the ocean and put that fish on the sand on the beach. Let me ask you. Is the fish happy? Is the fish happy? This is not a rhetorical question. This is a real question, all right? When you take the fish out of the ocean and put it on the beach, is the fish happy? No. What if you give that fish 100,000 cold hard cash? Is the fish happy then? Is the fish happy? What if you give that fish a lounge chair, a Corona, and a Playfish magazine? Check out the tail on that fish. Are those gills real or fake? I don't know. It's not important. But is the fish happy then? No. Why not? Because the fish is not meant for the beach, for the sand. It's meant for the ocean, right? Your life, hear me, friends. Your life is meant not for this world. Your life is meant for the world that is to come, eternity. That's what Peter said. This world is not your home. So I want you to have a lower expectation of this world, because there's no car, no house, no younger spouse, no nothing that can make you truly happy in this world. Let me tell you that, right? You know why? Because none of them will satisfy. They will one day go away, all of them. But what you do for God, what you do for people around you, that will make a difference for eternity. That's why Jesus said, come and follow me. Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. Jesus didn't say, follow me, I will make you richer, I will make you wealthier. Follow me, I'll make you more disciplined. Follow me, I'll make you more spiritual. All that is important. But follow me, I will make you fishers of men. You are meant for something so much, so much bigger than your pleasures, your happiness in this world.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. For more great resources and to keep yourself up to date, head to our website. Visit therocks.church.